You're listening to Buffalo Bills Football Monday on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. Now, the Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northwest Bank. Make the switch to Northwest Bank and get back to living by Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers, by Arbeit Software, the best office phone system in Buffalo, and presented by Catholic Health, the right way to care.
All right, hour two rolls on here on the Extra Point Show on WGR Sports Radio 550. After me, I'm going to hand it off. Maybe I'll just run it over to Murph. Just like Josh Allen running over Miles Jack, heat-seeking missile. Murph comes your way on One Bills Live with Steve Tasker. And they're going to be on until 3. And then, of course, it's Shope and the Bulldog. 3 till 7. And it's all part of a Buffalo Football Monday. In between, or while, I should say, Shope and the Bulldog are on, you'll hear from head coach Sean McDermott down at One Bills Drive. I'll be there for his weekly Monday press conference. They'll have Kyle Williams on, as they do every Monday, at about 4:30. And then they'll have Sean McDermott on a two-on-one with Shope and the Bulldog, as they always do on a Monday at about 5 p.m. So a lot to get to, a lot to unpack. Still talking about the big Bills victory yesterday, 24-21 over the Jacksonville Jaguars. My name is Sal Capaccio. Glad to be here with you every Monday after a game, and especially glad to be here after a win like this where you can call up and give your opinions. We haven't had a lot of calls on Josh Allen today. I thought we'd get a lot of them. There's been a pretty good debate on, you know, what his game was yesterday, how good he was, what he did, people comparing it to Tyrod Taylor, things like that. Look, if you want to look at the stat line and say that's similar to Taylor, that's right, it is. You know what the difference is? He's a rookie. Tyrod Taylor was in his seventh year last year, third as a starter with the Bills. Josh Allen was not perfect by any means yesterday. He still took off too early a few times, probably looked at the pass rush instead of the players downfield. I think that's been where he has to develop a little bit in his game, a little bit more in his game as they go forward. But I'm here to tell you, as someone who stands on the sidelines, watches every play and every throw from field level, he was good yesterday. His throws were good. He was accurate. He missed a few on him that were not accurate. It's going to happen. You want every throw to be perfect. It's not going to be. But he certainly had his most accurate day, his best day, I thought. Ran the offense well. Did a lot of really nice things. And I'm super encouraged by what I saw yesterday from Josh Allen. I think you should be too if you're a Buffalo Bills fan. Can he keep it up? I don't know. They take on the Miami Dolphins next week. And the Dolphins have, right now, not a very good defense when you look at the overall rankings of their club. So you would think that this would be an opportunity for Josh Allen to go in there in Miami next week and build on and be even better than what he did. But you never know in this league. Miami will have a game plan for him. He's always going to see things he's never seen. And we'll just stay on this and talk about it. It's our focus on the next game, brought to you by Atwal Eye Care, your vision, our focus. Miami Dolphins, 29th in the league. Yards per game, yards per play on defense. 29th, rushing yards per game. 26th per play. Passing, 30th per play, which might lend itself some big plays for the Bills passing game tomorrow, next week. Maybe they can get the ball downfield. And 21st in passing yards per game. What did Andrew Luck do against them yesterday? Let me take a look here. Because it was 24-14. In the fourth quarter, and then suddenly the Colts come back late. Andrew Luck, 30 of 37 for 343, three touchdowns and two interceptions. And then Josh Allen's going to have some opportunity next week. What's the weather like in Miami next week? I think it'll be about 83. You don't get as hot, though, on the field because it's they got that enclosure kind of, that half roof, if you will. Bills Dolphins next week, of course, on Sunday, 1 o'clock. Right here on WGR Sports Radio 550. Both teams right now trailing in the AFC East, but this is a game where the Bills have a one game, you know, they're behind Miami for one game. They could tie them in the standings and essentially pass them, if you're looking at that. The Bills still have a very legitimate opportunity to finish second in the AFC East, which then impacts next year's schedule. Because their crossover is, they already play the AFC North next year, all the teams. That doesn't matter. But they will play whoever they finish in the same spot as in the AFC South and in the AFC West. They finish in second, you're looking at the Chargers. coming to Buffalo again next year. Maybe Kansas City. Chargers could catch the Chiefs. They finish in second. You're looking at probably Indy. They could still catch Houston. Still a lot to be decided. Tennessee's still in the mix. That was our focus on the next game, brought to you by Atwal Eye Care, your vision, our focus. Let's roll through some phone calls here. Mitchell in Columbus. Hi, you're on WGR on the Extra Point Show.
Hey, Zay, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
So I want to talk about, I'm of the opinion that the Bills should get ahead of the curve this offseason and move on from LeSean McCoy. And one person that I've seen basically nobody talking about who could be a pretty good free agent signing for us this offseason is Mark Ingram from the Saints. I think, odds are we can probably get him for about what we're paying LeSean McCoy right now. And I think he can fulfill that role as a feature back down the road a bit longer, especially when you look at in terms of who's available at wide receiver and O-line in free agency this offseason. We're not going to get anywhere close to spending our cap. So that also gives us a pretty good opportunity.
He's going to command big money, like you said. It would be interesting to see how much a team's going to be willing to spend on him for the season, for the year, career he's had so far up to this point. He's certainly a guy that will fit in and help almost any team. I think the question starts with, though, Mitchell, what you said. What's the plan with LeSean McCoy? As of right now, the team has held fast that they are going to keep him on the roster. Anything can happen. Maybe by the end of the year, they see that that's just not feasible for them because they don't think that he's really what he used to be. But I do believe that right now. I do believe they're going to keep him around, and they're certainly not going to go out and spend big money on a guy when they already have another one that's making close to $9 million, or $9 million, I should say.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And I know you think they should move on from LeSean, and I'll say, that's a really good thought. I do wonder how much they're willing to spend on another running back if they do move on from LeSean, though.
I'm also thinking just with how much cap space we're going to have that we're not going to spend, it gives us a good opportunity to front load his contract a bit. So as better guys become available down the line, he won't be hurting us.
Yeah, one thing that people don't mention enough, Mitchell, is what the salary cap looks like beyond next year. Because next year, as many have reported and said, and I'll tell you, they're projected to have about $85 million right now in cap space, give or take. But then the following year, in 2020, it really jumps up, and they have the most in the league right now, projected at almost $130 million with all the projections and where its cap's going to go.
Yeah, so definitely just big things to look out for, and I just haven't seen anybody mentioning his name. So.
All right, well, I appreciate that. We had a T.J. Yeldon mention. We have a Mark Ingram mention now. Mike in Rochester. What's going on, Mike? You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. Thanks for taking my call, man. Love the show. Love your perspective. Love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So before I get into my main point, just two little quick things. Even aside from the fight yesterday, I've been really impressed with Shaq Lawson. I feel like he's really found a home in this defense, even when it looked like he was going to be the odd man out when McDermott came on board. So I've been really impressed with him. Also, Kelvin Benjamin, it was great to kind of see him step it up a little bit yesterday. Maybe he's kind of gotten over the hump of maybe us not being as good as we looked like we were going to be in beginning of the year. Would love to see him continue that forward. My main point was Josh Allen. I really feel like I saw a lot of growth and development from him yesterday, which was to be expected, you would think, in those 5 games that he was out, or those 5 weeks, rather. I thought it was really cool to see him hang in the pocket there, especially delivering that big strike and taking those hits. I'd like to see him not break the pocket so earlier, but I'd love to just hear your take more on what you thought about him growing in that time off and spending more time on the sidelines working with Dable.
I think it's interesting. And here's the other thing, Mike. Dable was on the sidelines yesterday. That's the first time he's been on the field for a Josh Allen start. He started coming down in the field. He had been up in the press box, remember. He came down in the field for the Indy game when Derek Anderson started, and then he stayed there for the Matt Barkley game against the Jets, and he stayed there for Josh Allen. So I got to think that there's something between the two that they enjoy having him there, and maybe, just maybe, to your point, maybe Allen and Dable felt that they were getting a lot of really good mileage out of him being on the sidelines when he's not playing and said, hey, we need this. This is good for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I did notice that too, and I heard them talking about that a little bit on the pregame with him going to be down on the sidelines. One thing I did like to see, which I want to see more of with Josh, is even when he breaks the pocket, there were a couple of plays yesterday where he broke the pocket when the pass rush. Would love to see him just start trusting his line more and not break it so soon. But even when he does, it looks like even when he breaks and rolls out like he's going to scramble, he's not looking to run right away. It's like he's still looking downfield, kind of like what Rodgers does, kind of like what Ben does when they extend that play and still try to throw. Would love to see, like, kind of those impromptu-type routes happening where he's able to still make a play with his arm even when he's making a play with his legs.
Yeah, totally get it. Totally get it. You know, one of the things coming out of college was he was a very good thrower on the run. Did you see the throw he made to Logan Thomas that wound up not counting?
Yes, I did.
That was a great throw on the run. A great throw on the run.
Great throw. Was that in the third down sequence?
Yes.
Getting penalized?
Yeah, they got that one. It got backed up. And then the next one was even a better throw. It was a laser. And that one got backed up, even though he threw it to Isaiah McKenzie. But that throw, I think, is what you're talking about. He's running right. Logan Thomas is in a sea of defenders. And somehow he's able to throw it and squeeze it in on the run.
Yeah, I thought those were great. And even after that, it was like when it was third 25, I think it was like at that point, it's like, listen, kid, you did everything we could have asked in those two plays. It's just, it stinks that you got penalized. Didn't think he was going to get the third and 25 completion, but it was like you did everything you could up until that point, and it was good to see. I wasn't expecting a completion on there, but it was great to kind of see him in those two plays, even though they got called back.
Absolutely. Yeah, good stuff, Mike. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, yeah, absolutely. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. If you want to jump on board, I got open phone lines right now. If you want to jump on board here on the Extra Point Show on WGR Sports Radio 550. A lot to be happy about yesterday, I think, for the Buffalo Bills. There's no doubt about that. And we saw what happened yesterday on the field and on the sidelines. So, of course, that's going to be my extra point from the sidelines, brought to you by Catholic Health, quality care that keeps you in the game. That's the right way to care. Can we go back and hear that quote from Sean McDermott again and what he said about the fight? And then do we also have what he said about Shaq Lawson? He was asked about Shaq Lawson and any discipline, team discipline for Shaq. So John's going to play the two things Sean McDermott said about the fight yesterday. He was asked, first of all, about the entire fight and energizing the club. And then he was asked after that about Shaq Lawson and any team discipline.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was great the way our crowd reacted, the way our team reacted. We're at home, and, you know, someone's going to step up and do that. I expect us to step up and play as a team, and I thought we did that. Our defense stepped up. They started with the ball inside the one and ended up trying to kick a field goal from wherever it was, and they missed. So I thought it gave us a spark. I'll go back and look at it, but at the end of the day, a guy defending his teammate, you know, and I've sat and already talked with Shaq. We do things the right way, but when people step up and challenge us, I don't expect us to back down.
Sean McDermott on what happened yesterday, the scrum on the sidelines, which, I got caught a little bit in the middle of, and I had my friends going back and watching video and screenshotting me and sending the video on my phone and texting me like, "Ha, are you okay?" It was all right. I mean, I think I got bumped by one of the players, but it was scary down there. And the ironic part was, personally, I was backing up trying not to be anywhere near it because you felt it coming. You felt the players getting involved, and I'm kind of near the sidelines there at the yellow markings where they allow us to go up to. Once that started happening, I backed up and said, okay, need to get out of this. And then, boom, all of a sudden, everybody's just on top of you, and you had to find your way and navigate your way through there. Then you see the coaches coming over and the trainers and everybody trying to, you know, security's over there and trying to keep the fans out of it. It was just an insane scene, but that's sports. It's what happens. And yeah, I mean, as far as Shaq Lawson's concerned, I think that's exactly what Sean McDermott should do, is what he did, which is I talked to him, explained to him that we never want to hurt our team, but I'm also happy that he stood up for his teammate and we don't back down from anybody. And he's not going to give him any team discipline. I would expect something from the league, some sort of fine. From the league, I think no suspension. They could do that. I don't think so. To get suspended in this league for something like that, it's got to be pretty egregious. And like, you know, those guys went at it, but I don't think so. Even for Leonard Fournette, I don't know. I mean, he did come off the field. He went to the other sideline, but again, I just you don't see that a lot in this league, and there's not tons of precedent. I think Marshawn Lynch did run out of the field, but didn't he bump an official? And that's why, I think that's why he got suspended, right? So we'll see what happens. We'll see what comes of it. Micah Hyde after the game said, yeah, those guys, a few players told us after the game that those guys were going at it all game since the first quarter. They were jawing at each other. There was some sort of history. And Micah Hyde goes, I don't know what it is. I don't want to pretend to know. He said, but certainly we know that Leonard Fournette was jawing at Shaq, and Shaq is not a quiet person, let's say, right? Mike Mahide said something like that. So it was interesting. And I could tell you that is absolutely true. So that is our extra point from the sidelines, brought to you by Catholic Health. Quality care that keeps you in the game. That's the right way to care. Ken in Lancaster. Hi, Ken. You're on the Extra Point Show.
How you doing, Sal?
Good, thanks.
Hey, a couple quick things here. Charles Clay, is this a big cap hit if we get rid of him, or why do we keep him around here?
$4.5 million next year, if you want to do that. You can save. You would eat $4.5 million of dead money. It would save $4.5 million on the cap.
And if, you know, I mean, he don't block any. He don't block when he's in there.
I don't agree with that. I think he's actually a pretty good blocker when he's in there. I just think he's a product this year of an offensive line that's really having trouble overall blocking in the run game.
Okay. And you actually think Tremaine Edmonds is progressing as a linebacker?
His name is Tremaine Edmonds.
Edmonds, yeah, that's what I meant.
Do I think he is? I see things where he is progressing. Yes, he's. I think he's better dropping into coverage and covering guys out of the backfield. I think he's more instinctual. He's getting to spots a little bit sooner, a little bit quicker. I think once in a while he still gets caught up where he maybe, you know, gets caught up in the wash, as they say, where he might not take the proper angle so he can't get back to where he's supposed to be. Those things will come with time. You know, he's still young. He still has a body to grow into. If a bigger lineman gets his hands on him, sometimes I think he can do a better job of getting off, but I do see progression, yes.
Did he play inside or outside in college?
He was a outside backer, I think, but they ran a 4-3, right? He can play inside. If you're asking, like, should he be outside? No, I think he's fine where he is. I think he's fine in the middle. Maybe he's more of an ideal fit as a 3-4 inside linebacker than a 4-3, but I don't think he's out of place.
Yeah, okay, because he just don't seem to be making natural reads for a middle linebacker.
Ken, he's 20 years old. He just turned 20 years old, you know?
Yeah,
he's playing a professional game against, you know, guys that have been doing this for, you know, a long time and are making good money. And yes, he's a first round pick. He's playing every snap. He's going to make mistakes. He's not going to be nearly the player in 5 years that he is now. We all hope. I mean, I wouldn't think that's the case. As Sean McDermott has pointed out, Luke Kuechly certainly was not the player, you know, his rookie year that he became to be.
Yeah. Well, like you said, that's why I asked you if you think he's progressing. I'm not sure of that, but, you know.
Well, I think he is in some areas. I think he still has room to grow in other areas.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Hope that helped. 803-0550, 888-550-2550 here on the Extra Point Show on WGR Sports Radio 550. We haven't done sit-up, stand-down, hey, buddy. I'll do that a little bit later because we always kind of get into that. But, when I do sit-up and stand-down, it's always about, you know, what happened around the league. And if you had any thought at all, all right, and again, I'm not telling you, I'm not bringing this up because I think the Bills do, but if you had any thought at all, like the playoffs for the Bills and going on a run, finishing 9-7, I think you needed Miami to beat Indy yesterday, right, John? I think, wouldn't that make sense? Because Indy's already got one of the wild cards is coming out of the West. You got the Chiefs and the Chargers. I mean, that's almost certain.
Right, yeah. The Chargers have basically locked that 5 seed already.
Unless they catch the Chiefs, then the Chiefs are going to get it, okay?
Right, yeah.
So the other wild card has to come from, I think right now, it's going to be in the South, the way it's looking, because you have 7-3 Houston, 6-5 Indy, 5-5 Tennessee. I mean, you still have 6-5 Baltimore, but think about this. This is what kills the Bills. They lost to Baltimore. They lost to Indy. So even though they're 2 games back, they're really essentially 3 games back.
Yeah.
That's why I think you needed Indy to lose yesterday so you could be 1 game back with 5 to play.
Yeah, and plus you still have 2 games against Miami that are both very much winnable games for the Bills. I mean, I forget who said it earlier, like they were thinking about the Bills being able to put some wins together. And I wouldn't say this team is in a hunt for the playoffs, but I said it last week. Other than the New England game, I think every one of these last games on the schedule is very much winnable for this team. So you need all those wins around the league that you can get. But yeah, I think that 3-team AFC South race is going to be one that's going to come down to the last week or two, I'd say. And, you know, that's going to have huge implications on the playoffs as a whole on how that AFC South race shakes out.
No doubt about it. And also, like I said, all this determines on who the Bills play in their next year's schedule, which will be interesting as well. The Bills, I think right now, as it sits, if I had to make a prediction, I think they finished second in the AFC East because Miami, is not very good. They're 5-6 now. Bills play them this week, one game behind them. And the Jets are 3-8, falling behind. The Bills already beat them. So if I had to look at it now, the Bills will probably finish second in the AFC East. But again, then who are you fighting for those wild cards? Baltimore, who you already lost to, and Indy, who you already lost to. Now, I think the other thing you'd have to hope for, again, I'm not, maybe I shouldn't even be doing this, right? Why am I doing this? People are tuning in right now going, is this guy talking playoffs? I'm just saying, if you're one of those people, if you're one of those people, you'd want Tennessee to finish ahead of Indy if you're one of those people. That's what you would want. That's how it would have to work out. 803-0550, 888-550-2550 if you want to jump on board here on the Extra Point Show. So the Bills yesterday got some contributions from quite a few players in the victory, as we know. Two of those players were the oldest players on the field. 35-year-old Lorenzo Alexander, 35-year-old Kyle Williams. Now, the Bills also have another 35-year-old in Derek Anderson, but of course, he wasn't on the field. But you talk about filling up stat line. Let's just add up what Kyle Williams and Lorenzo Alexander did yesterday. Let's add it up between the two of them, because they kind of split it across the board a little bit here or there. Between the two of them, let me read this to you. 14 tackles, 2.5 sacks, 3 tackles for loss, 3 quarterback hurries, and 2 passes defended, which were both by Alexander on basically tip balls, batted down balls, however you want to say it. Pretty amazing. Pretty awesome. I think Lorenzo Alexander has earned another contract with this team. I think he should be in the Pro Bowl discussion this year. I think that's how good of a year he's had. He has earned, to me, another contract from this team, and I hope they offer that to him. I hope he wants to come back, and I think he could still be valuable going forward. Even if he eventually isn't the starter where he is, at outside linebacker, and then even rush packages, things like that, he is still valuable as a special teamer, as a leader, but he can play still. He could still be effective in play on the defense as a starter when many people thought, some people thought going into training camp he'd be a casualty, a cut, because he wouldn't contribute. He's not only started, he's been one of the better players on defense, and I think has had a Pro Bowl type of season. That's how good I think he's been. John in Hamburg. Hi, John. You're on WGR.
Hey, how's it going, Buzz?
Good, thank you.
The only thing, I'm a hockey fan. I'm not big on football. But I felt like on the last 3 minutes of the game, I felt like the team was, like, they already won the game. They weren't playing to win the game. They could have lost the game in those last 3 minutes. And I feel like they weren't playing as hard as they should have been in that time. And I'll let you go.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I mean, they went to a 4-minute offense to try and slow the game down, try and bleed some clock. I think that's strategy. That's what you do. I don't know what you mean by not playing as hard. I don't agree with that at all. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll do our sit-up, stand-down. Hey, buddy, got to get to right here. Half hour left and more of your phone calls on the Extra Point Show.
On a basically a curl route about 18 yards down the field. Felt like the corner kind of jumped it. Robert saw the safety deep, cut in front of his face. I really didn't even see it get caught. You know, I got hit as soon as I threw it. You know, looking at the replay, he made a heck of a catch and then a heck of an effort after the catch to go score. It was awesome for him.
Josh Allen on Robert Foster there. Let's blow through some phone lines if we can. You guys have been waiting on hold. I appreciate that. Appreciate you calling and talking here on the Extra Point Show. Let's start ourselves off this segment with Sean in Dallas. What's going on, Sean? Good to hear from you again.
Hey, Sal. Yeah, thanks for taking my call, man. Love what you do here on Mondays. It's my favorite show to listen to be honest with you. So thank you so much for doing this. Hey, a couple of things really quick. Josh Allen, definitely step in the right direction, in my opinion. I liked what I saw, especially a lot of those balls that were penalized or, you know, were dropped. I mean, I'll tell you, he was putting the ball on a dime.
I know, right?
In the right place. So I'm going to give him credit for that. Unfortunately, a lot of those passes got taken away from us. But the progression looked like it's a step forward. It's not, you know, elite yet, but I'll tell you what, it's promising. Number two, Lorenzo Alexander, you commented on him a minute ago. I'm going to tell you, man, he is not playing like a 30-something-year-old guy. He is playing like he is in the prime of his life, in the prime of his NFL career. He is a top-notch football player on this team right now. You bring him back next year. Some guys defy the laws of gravity when it comes to age. Lorenzo Alexander definitely defies the laws of age gravity. There's no doubt about it. And number three, the catch that was caught between two guys before the fight broke out. This is my opinion, Sal. The ball was never possessed in the play. Nobody had possession of it. Both guys landed out of bounds, actually. I'm actually really surprised they didn't call that an incompletion. Because nobody established possession, you know what I'm
saying? Here's the problem, though, Sean. I thought about this. How do you call an incompletion when the ball never hit the ground? You're saying because they ran out of bounds, but I don't think they did until they even rolled through the end zone.
They do land out of bounds. Go back and watch it. That's why
okay.
The ball at the 1 yard line.
Well, his butt hit the 1 yard line, and then didn't they hit the pylon or roll into the end zone? I can't remember.
But even so, it's really close.
Okay.
And the possession, I don't think, was ever determined, and they're out of bounds.
Right.
How do they not call it an incomplete pass? That's just my take.
I got you. It was weird. Here's the thing, though. You know this, and thanks for calling, Sean. I always appreciate you calling from Dallas. Yeah, the tie goes to the receiver. I mean, that's the rule, right? Tie goes to the runner in baseball. Tie goes to the receiver in football. If there's dual established possession, you give it to the offense. It's just the way the rule's written, the way that's always been. But you could make an argument that Levi Wallace had more of possession. I think that's the only beef I would have is it would maybe Levi Wallace had more of the possession. I honestly didn't have a problem with them calling a completion there. I've seen enough of them where it's dual possession. You give it to the offense. His butt hit at the 1 yard line. If you're going to call it possession to the offense, I think that's why. But I feel you, Sean. I mean, it was tough to really determine that. So I think you just have to go with what's called in the field at that point. Jeff in Pittsburgh. Hi, Jeff. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. How are you?
Good, Jeff. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's good. Glad to hear Robert Foster's name come up by Josh Allen. I thought it was interesting that early in the year, there was a lot of talk about big play potential, and I know that you were one of the guys, I think, early in the summer that talked about the potential that he showed in the minicamp and things of that nature. I think you sort of make it, right, when people start to take the fact that this guy is starting to make some big plays and it's not a conversation point anymore.
That's right, and you know, he had a couple chances early on in the season, Jeff, that he didn't take advantage of and come down with. So I think it's good for him to finally that's starting to happen, right? Because I was a little concerned that they kept this kid. They cut Rod Streeter. They wanted to develop him, and then he just wasn't showing any signs in progress. But he certainly has the last couple games.
Yeah, Sal, the thing that I'd add, too, is we came up from Pittsburgh for this game. First game, your stadium's phenomenal. Old style, close to the field, was great. The atmosphere. And we're a little biased, right? There was a group of us actually coached Robert in high school, so it was the first time we got to see him play. So to see that first NFL touchdown happen live was pretty neat. And I think his catch, actually, the second catch, where he got pretty hit hard with the helmet to helmet, which led to another touchdown, which was key scoring drive, right, to put the game away, I think was probably even a bigger catch in many ways, going over the middle, being able to make that catch and take the hit. So I'm excited for what you guys have there. I think his potential at Alabama was never fulfilled. People don't realize the year he started, he was targeted 12 times in the first four games before he got hurt, caught all 11 passes, two of them touchdowns. So I think there's big things to come there, and I think you guys got a diamond in the rough. So
now, where was that? He played high school at Central Valley, I'm reading. Is that where you coached?
Yep. Yes, sir. Central Valley, and
awesome.
Outside of Pittsburgh, PA.
Great. Well, what did you think of the game yesterday, the atmosphere at New Era Field?
It was unbelievable. It was. I go to a lot of Steeler games, I got to tell you. I mean, like I said, the environment there and how close you are to the field. We sat right in section 134 in the 50. We got to meet a lot of fans there. Everybody was excited. It was a great day. We were impressed. And we were lucky enough that we got there early. We walked in, or we drove in, and we got a parking pass, and they sat us right in front of the stadium. So you guys got a great thing going up.
Hey, by the way, you'll get a chance to see Robert come your way next year. The Bills are scheduled to play at the Steelers next year.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
So that's good for you that you got a chance to see that. I'm always happy to hear stories like that. Thanks, Jeff.
Yep, thanks for taking me, Sal.
Absolutely, no problem. Yeah, that's really cool. One of his high school coaches there came up from Pittsburgh. Good stuff. Jerry in Tonawanda. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, you know, the point, I want to make two points. But the first one is, you know, the play that won that game was the ejection. Fournette was killing us. He gets in from the one. And now they got to put Hyde in the game, and it might have been his first carry even of the game, and he loses a yard, and now they panic. That's Fournette getting in from the one is a guarantee. They might have run it to him four times. That guy is a monster. The ejection really was the key to the game. The other thing is, I really want to talk about this whole, the guy a few callers ago that says about, you know, this whole prevent and run the ball, the 4-minute offense. I mean, I hate all of it. The Rams don't play that way, and I know we're not the Rams. But this whole take care of the ball thing, it really bothers me. You know, you look at stats of Joe Namath, of Brett Favre, none of those guys, why is this so new to the game, take care of the ball?
Because the game, I don't know, it's not new to the game. In fact, I think we're more loose with the game. There are way more interceptions.
There aren't.
Right. Sorry. I'm confusing what you're saying here. So listen, it's not new to the game. I think it just some coaches, the way they want their philosophy, the way they build their team, they would rather have that than, you know, take risks. Some coaches are more willing to take risks because of that. I mean, the Rams, the way that they play, they know that they could wind up, you know, throwing more interceptions because simply they throw a lot more passes and they have a lot more wide open offense. You have to be willing for that.
Well, my point is Joe Namath threw 173 touchdown passes, 225 interceptions. That's 50 more interceptions. In today's NFL, in year two, he would have been delivering bread somewhere.
Right, but what I don't know what the point of that is, because the game has certainly changed. This is not the 1960s. The rules have changed, and yeah, if he's going to do that today, I would cut him, because you can't do that today. But the game is set up. Listen, the game is set up, Jerry, today to not do that. So if you're doing that, you stink.
Well, that's the problem, though. You're trying to search for that guy that throws 30 touchdowns and 10 picks, and there's only four of those guys in the league at any one time.
Look, let me give you a stat here, okay? The 20 years ago, I mean, I think I got to look up the exact number right now. The completion percentage that led the league 20 years ago, I believe it was Brett Favre, who was at like 65 or 66%, like led the league, might even been 68, whatever. That's like the average today. That's the average completion percentage. So you can't trot guys out there who are going to basically be like Nathan Peterman. To your point, if Nathan Peterman played in the Joe Namath era, he'd still have a job.
He would, and I'll tell you why, because you know what's going on in the – think about it. Watch tape from the 70s and the 80s. It was easier to play quarterback because you had receivers running free all over the field.
But what I don't get – okay, so what is your overall point?
How often do you have a receiver running free now? You have these quarterbacks that need to fit the ball at 70% rate, no interceptions in the small windows, and you wonder why there's none in the league? Because the standard is wrong.
Okay, so you're just complaining that the league has changed, that's all.
Well, the league has changed, but I make the argument, the reason that Barkley played so well 2 weeks ago, he had nothing to lose.
I'm sorry, Jerry, look, I love when you call, I'm just unsure of your point here, that's all. Like, what, are you complaining about the league rules? Are you complaining about the fact that there aren't enough quarterbacks being developed to play under these rules? I don't understand.
I think we don't let quarterbacks play, and then we don't let them play, and then when they fail, you know what? You're not a good quarterback.
Well, yeah, that's true too. Because look, I mean, fair or unfair, and it probably is unfair. If you're a general manager or head coach, you don't have time to develop them anymore. It's a win now, and you're out. If you don't win in 2-3 years, you get fired. And look, that sucks. I agree, but that's just the way it is.
I am making the argument they go farther the other way. They tell you how I want you to play, and then when you fail, it's your fault that you fail.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, guys are getting paid a lot of money, and they have egos, and they do that. And it takes a special coach, to be able to relinquish that type of control and ego. You know that.
Yeah, and I think there's not enough of them. They're all,
Sure, there's a lot of old school coaches out there aren't like that. I do have to run, buddy. I understand your point now, but I got to run. I appreciate your call. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. All right, we're going to take a timeout here. We'll come back. I still got to get to sit up, stand down, and hey, buddy, we're doing it right away when we come back here on the Extra Point Show.
My expectations would I'd be back. I'd be better, you know, mentally. Obviously, physically, you know, with the elbow holding up. And I just want to go out there and complete the ball when it needed to be completed and make plays when plays needed to be made and, you know, trust the guys around me. And that's what we kind of did today. Robert Foster makes a huge play to start the game. Our defense played outstanding. You know, the goal line stop and the missed field goal. 3 plays later, we were down in the end zone. You just can't say enough about it and just how we kind of pulled together here. It's an exciting win. It's definitely going to hopefully carry some momentum into next week.
I see on Get Up, they got Adam Schefter on right now, and the question is being posed, will Leonard Fournette be disciplined by the NFL? Hey, there I am, running away from the fight. I don't know. Maybe. Shaq could be too. I don't know how that's going to work out. It's going to be interesting. Sal Capaccio here in the Extra Point Show with you. We got Murph coming up with Steve Tasker, One Bills Live at the top of the hour. Shopin the Bulldog at 3. You'll hear from Sean McDermott twice today, once with the local media at 4 o'clock, once with Shopin the Bulldog at 5 o'clock, and sandwiched in between that will be Kyle Williams at 4:30. Eric Wood has his yearly charity event tonight. I'll be headed there with my wife. That should be a fun time tonight. Should be good. Raising some money for good causes. So, we were wondering yesterday on the game broadcast, or I know maybe the pregame show or postgame, whatever it was, I was talking with people, why did Jacksonville have Bold City written on their hoodies? Apparently, back in the day, Bold New City of the South. Someone has a sign for Jacksonville. Bold New City of the South. There you go. Bold City. I just thought it was odd and weird. So then someone photoshopped a picture of Doug Marrone wearing a Bold City hoodie and put Punt City. And that's funny. That's funny. I just tweeted it out. That's funny. Go look at it. All right. Let's get to our sit up and stand down real quickly here. We only got a couple minutes left. We're going to sit up for Philip Rivers. 25 straight completions. NFL record, I believe that was, right? He finished the game. Get this. Philip Rivers finished the game 28 of 29. That is unbelievable. Passing for 259 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Somehow he still didn't have a perfect quarterback rating. I have no idea. I think because 138.4, isn't it like 143 is a perfect one, I think?
I think it's like 158.3. Or I don't know how that works. Dumb. It's the weirdest scale known to man, yeah. And I'm not a math person.
No, exactly. We're going to stand down on something Baker Mayfield said. Baker, you're playing great. I love you. I loved him coming out of college. He deserved to be the number one pick. I had no problem with it, I should say, and he's playing really well. But he took a shot at Hugh Jackson for going to the Bengals and said, hey, this is a guy that asked us to fight for him, and then he goes join the enemy. We play twice a year. Look, Baker, you'll learn it's a business quick, because if you ever got cut, if you got released by the Browns, you would go to the Bengals too if they offered you a job or anybody else, regardless of how many times they played them. Plus, what happened in college?
I was saying he went from Texas Tech to Oklahoma,
right.
And they play in the Big
12
together.
That's right. He transferred. Come on, Baker. I'm standing down on Baker Mayfield's comments on Hugh Jackson going to Cincinnati. That has nothing to do with Baker Mayfield, the player. I love him. He's playing great. It's good to see. But don't say that. It's a business. You'll learn that. You'll know. And you did the same thing yourself, essentially. All right. Who's my buddy this week? You know who's my buddy? All of you Buffalo sports fans are my buddy. You know why? It is a great week. It's been a great, whatever, two-week stretch to be a Buffalo sports fan for all these different reasons.
A 14-yard quarterback draw for the big man. Touchdown, Bills.
Sam Reinhart, it's your turn. Sabres to win the game. Reinhart to the right circle, cuts in back and scores! Say hello to your first place Buffalo Sabres.
Handoff marks up the middle, and the end zone marks the spot for another Buffalo touchdown.
And that was Paul Peck on the call on our sister station, ESPN 1520. Dan Dunleavy on the call for the Buffalo Sabres, of course, on WGR Sports Radio 550. And John Murphy on the call yesterday for the Bills on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network against the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Sabres have won 9 in a row. The Bills have won 2 in a row. That's 11 straight. You got the UB Bulls winning the MAC East Championship going out of Detroit next Friday night. It is great to be a Buffalo sports fan. So all of you Buffalo sports fans out there, revel in it. Enjoy it. It hasn't happened in a long time. It doesn't happen very often in any city that we can get the cross, dual, triple, whatever you want to call it, professional, college, winning streak, championships. It's awesome to be a part of. I had a good weekend, even with Syracuse thrown in, beating BC. I know a lot of you don't care about that. It's been a great weekend for all of us to enjoy our sports and a great win for the Buffalo Bills yesterday. We got John Murphy once again with Steve Tasker coming up on One Bills Live. And then we're going to have Chopin the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. Hear from head coach Sean McDermott at 4 o'clock today as he meets with the local media. And then Sean McDermott with Chopin the Bulldog again at 5 p.m. Kyle Williams, who had an outstanding game yesterday, keeps playing strong. 13th year in the league, 35 years old. He's going to be on with Chopin the Bulldog at 4:30 today. For John Simon doing a great job, I'm Sal Capaccio. Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Show. One Bills Live up next.